Well, the story of the Fitzgeralds in Ireland begins with the Anglo-Normans, who arrived in 1169 to help the King of Leinster, Dermot MacMurrough, win back the kingdom he lost to the High King of Ireland, Rory O'Connor. Now, those who took part in the expedition were given grants of land, and a man named Maurice Fitzgerald was granted much of the area known today as County Kildare. So that's how they became to be associated with County Kildare. Now, to establish themselves in the area, the Fitzgeralds built a castle complex at Maynooth, the ruins of which can still be seen today. Now, as a power base, Maynooth was a strategic choice because it was a naturally fortified site on the confluence of two rivers. But more importantly, it was on the western border of the Pale, the part of Ireland around Dublin City that was directly under the control of the English government. So as such, the Fitzgeralds literally held the middle ground between English Ireland on the one hand and the Gaelic Irish lordships on the other.
And it's difficult, Carol, in today's world to, I suppose, understand the power that the Fitzgeralds had. But how significant were they?
The Fitzgerald dynasty were very significant, particularly in the medieval period. I suppose they had a remarkable ability to present themselves as Irish to the Gaelic Irish while asserting their Englishness to those in the Pale. Like many Anglo-Norman families, they created marriage alliances with the Gaelic Irish and they adopted the Irish language, Irish dress and Irish customs, becoming more Irish than the Irish themselves, as the saying goes. Yet, they managed to hold their own at court in England and they were also related by marriage to members of the English royal household. So they were rewarded for that loyalty. And in 1316, they were raised to the peerage and created Earls of Kildare. Now, by the late 15th century, they emerged as the most influential family in medieval Ireland. And because of their strategic position between the English Pale and the Gaelic lordships, successive English monarchs actually delegated government of Ireland to them. So this is how significant they were. However, this all came to an end with King Henry VIII, the good King Henry VIII himself. And it came to an end because the Fitzgeralds opposed his attempts to make Ireland English. They were seen as a threat to the new Protestant state that Henry was trying to create. Now, an unsuccessful rebellion by the 10th Earl of Kildare, the so-called Silken Thomas, provided the Tudor government with a perfect excuse to destroy the Fitzgeralds. And in fact, they attempted to wipe out the entire family. In fact, in 1537, Henry VIII had Silken Thomas and his five uncles, in other words, most of the prominent Fitzgerald men, executed in London.
Wow. You mentioned there earlier on Maynooth Castle, and anyone who drives through Maynooth will be familiar, as you say, of the ruins and the beautiful grounds there, and you can walk through the grounds of Maynooth Castle. So that's where the Fitzgeralds were initially based. Where does Carton House come into it?
Yes. Well, with the defeat of Silken Thomas and the execution of the prominent members of the Fitzgerald family, the family lost not only their leaders, but also their lands, their castle at Maynooth, their political influence and their control over Gaelic lords. However, they spent generations maintaining their contacts at the English court, and they continued to cultivate ties on the European continent. And this helped them to rebuild their political and social position. Now, marriage alliances and public roles performed by the Fitzgerald women at this time were hugely significant in rehabilitating the family. And this is discussed in the book. They subsequently regained the lands and titles, but it took 200 years for them to regain their former glory and to regain their position at court. Now, in the meantime, in that 200 years, Maynooth Castle passed from the Fitzgeralds into the ownership of Richard Boyle, the first Earl of Cork. But it became badly damaged during the Confederate Wars of the 1640s and was abandoned to fall to ruin. So when the Fitzgeralds rose again and returned to Maynooth in the 18th century, they found Maynooth Castle to be in such a ruinous state that they couldn't live there. But in any case, they needed a new house that reflected their new prominence and their newly found power. So they decided to settle at Carton, at the opposite end of Maynooth town from their castle, and to upgrade an existing house there. But the castle remained as a reminder of their former glory.
Right. Now, much has been made of the recent visit of Michael D. Higgins to the United Kingdom and, of course, the visit of Queen Elizabeth to Ireland back in, I think it was 2011, two or three years ago.
Yes.
We have had royal visitors to County Kildare before Queen Elizabeth, and I believe one of them visited Carton House.
Absolutely. Queen Victoria visited Carton House in the 19th century. Now, the Fitzgeralds, as I mentioned before, maintained royal collections over the years. The first Duchess of Leinster was a daughter of the Duke of Richmond. She was a great-granddaughter of King Charles II. She was a goddaughter of King George II. So the connections were there all along. But in 1849, Queen Victoria paid a private visit to the third Duke and Duchess of Leinster at Carton. And however, aware of the devastation that was being wrought by the Great Famine at this time, the Lord Lieutenant of Ireland advised that her visit to Carton be private in nature because it was felt that a state visit would impose unnecessary expense upon the nobility and gentry. But it was also felt that there could be no public ceremony in the Irish countryside when all classes were suffering. Now, despite the intention that the Queen's visit be private, it had much of the pomp and ceremony of a state visit. And we know from contemporary newspapers that the Queen and her entourage walked around the gardens at Carton. They were serenaded by two military bands playing airs. They had lunch in the house while guests and onlookers were entertained in marquee tents, which were pitched on the domain for the occasion. Then after lunch, we know that the Queen's party came out side and they watched the Duke's tenants and their wives, or some of them at least, perform some jigs and reels to the music of a piper. But the newspapers at the time were at pains to point out that this was a genuine exhibition of dance by respectable, sober people and not some drunken tomfoolery. But of course, all of this can be contrasted with the plight of those who suffered, you know, from starvation and cholera and typhoid on the Fitzgerald's estates during the famine. And information can be found about this in the book too.
And there would have been a knowledge then within Kildare that there was a member of the royal family, indeed Queen Victoria, in the county at that time or in the area at that time.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the domain was decorated in all sorts of welcome signs, as would befit a royal visitor, and they were all visible at the time, yes.
Okay, now behind, they say, every good man is a good woman, can you tell me about the first Duchess of Leinster, Lady Emily Lennox?
Yes. Lady Emily Lennox is a character that sort of resonates with us still today. As I mentioned, she was the daughter of the Duke of Richmond, a great-granddaughter of a king, a goddaughter of another, and she was very fashionable, well-connected and well-accustomed to luxury. She married James, the 20th Earl of Kildare, in 1747, and as he was playing his part in the family's re-emergence as Ireland's foremost political and social power, she was playing her part. And she did that by overseeing the development of Carton House and Domain. She was fully aware that a house was an outward display of power and prestige. And this became even more important to the Fitzgerald family after James was created Duke of Leinster in 1766. And several of the essays in the book refer to the family's displays at this time and their ostentatious displays with their growing status. There's descriptions of the sumptuous decoration of interiors and the collection of fine art objects that they had, the lavish balls that they put on, the luxury foods and the livery servants. And there's also descriptions of how the natural landscape was sculpted to create a beautiful setting for the house. Having said that, they also considered the economic impact of their residence in the locality and the directed developments in Maynooth Town.
Right, excellent. Now, so she puts all this effort in, Lady Emily Lennox, into redesigning the house and I suppose the power that the house represented. Yeah. Why did the Fitzgeralds leave?
They didn't so much leave, I suppose, as that the estate fell out of their control, if we want to put it that way. It remained in their control until the early 1920s. So they were there for quite some time, until the sons of the fifth Duke of Leinster came to live there. Now, in the early 1920s, Edward Fitzgerald, who was the youngest son of the fifth Duke of Leinster, was a bit of a playboy. He had lots of debts. And he sold his birthright to an English financier called Sir Henry Malaby Deely in order to pay off some serious gambling debts that he had. Now, Edward was third in line to succeed and never thought he would inherit Carton. But as fate would have it, both of his older brothers died. Desmond was killed in the First World War and Maurice died in an asylum in Scotland. So, when Edward became seventh Duke of Leinster, Carton was lost to the Fitzgeralds. Now, having said that, some of Edward's family lived out their days in the house. And in fact, the new owners, the Malaby Deelys, gave them the chance to buy back their property in 1948, but the asking price was simply too high. So consequently, the house and what remained of the estate was sold on, firstly to Lord Brockett, an English brewer, and then in turn to the Malahan family, the present owners.
Right, okay. Now, the book is being launched. As we speak, the 12th Annual Historic Houses of Ireland Conference is taking place at NUI Maynooth, and this evening there will be a gala dinner in the Gold Saloon at Carton House. This is obviously one of the great houses, and the book will be launched later on this evening. Now, Carton House is one example of where we've had these old big houses, the big house being sold. It was redeveloped into a golf course and a hotel. There's obviously huge running costs here. What's the general feeling among historians about private people taking over these houses? Is it viewed as positive because they'll keep the upkeep, or would it be preferred that they would be, I suppose, kept as the intended house that they were?
That's a tricky question, because I think there are mixed feelings amongst historians as there are amongst the general public and those particularly concerned with heritage. I know that in 2000, the redevelopment of Carton as a premier golf resort and hotel was criticised by some people, and this is referred to in the book as well. We know that a hotel was added to the main house, which altered the original 18th century house, and the 18th century grounds were converted into golf courses. But having said that, some of those who had initially objected have been pleasantly surprised by the subtlety and sensitivity of the redevelopment and have written about this. Others are still unsure. But it must be said that most country house owners are aware of their responsibilities as custodians of the built heritage and are generally sympathetic to the historic significance and integrity of the properties that they own. But as owners, they are well within their rights to consider all options to make a property economically viable and to keep it open to the public.
Did Downton Abbey get it right?
I think Downton Abbey has a lot to answer for in a positive way, for showing how, you know, a property can make money and also garner and create an interest among the public about forgotten aspects of our past.